All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Corey Hirsch, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Settemeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Regalia?
Hey, making out.
Doing all right, man. A little sore from this men's league game last Sunday that you failed to even respond to.
Back at it this quickly?
We were back at it, and you know how they reward the champs? 10 o'clock slot. 10
o'clock slot. Well, that's why I wasn't there.
That is George W. Bush right there. That's Bush League.
It's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable.
Who we talked to?
I knew you weren't going to show anyway because you...
Well, that's way too late.
You were just so excited about something we'll bring up here in a little bit. Something that's coming back. We ended up losing. Blue Devils.
Wow.
Our old foes.
Jeez.
Good game, though. Really good game.
Any snipes?
I got one.
Yeah? Toby in action?
I had an apple. A little Toby action. I'm terrible, though. God. I'm not going to lie to you. We had 5 forwards and 3D. So the kid
a little too much ice time.
Dying. And I'm out of shape. Like, I'm fat as a seal right now, so
baby seal.
I'm coming back a baby seal, exactly. All-Star Weekend, bro.
Oh.
A little recap. Let's recap it. I know you were tuned in.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something like that. Now, this year they had a player with the most points out of all the, you know, events take home $1 million.
Wow.
$1 million. Do you know who the fastest skater was, Riggs?
I don't.
I think you do.
Is his name Connor?
Yeah. Connor McJesus. Connor McDavid. 13.4 seconds. You think you? What do you think you could do it in?
13.5.
You'd still be playing if you could skate 13.5. Although you're fast. I will say that. You will say it. You're pretty fast, man. Good skate. Fourth time he won it. It's kind of cool. That's one of my favorite things to watch those guys. Because they're, man, like people don't understand.
Just rips.
I mean, they are moving. Unless you're
floating
down there.
Yeah.
And you see, I mean, you see it on TV. Yeah, they're fast. But when you're, you know, as close as we've been lucky enough to be, it's crazy. I'll tell you one guy who wasn't flying.
Yeah, well, I saw that.
Oh, Coochie Poo. I thought... hospitality money got into some of Michael Bublé's stash there.
I don't know. I think he would have produced them and been a little more productive if he dipped into Bublé's stash.
I think you're right. That was a little... Baller, you should... well, you know what Bublé said.
My buddy told me this is just a microdose of mushrooms, and he was lying. So, I'll be honest, I thought I was in Blades of Glory for most of the time that I was out there, until it sort of settled down, and then I realized, holy shit, I am at the NHL All-Star Game.
But yeah,
no, he needed a little, fun dry there.
I think it had something to do with the Four Nations face-off tournament next year. Russia and Czech aren't involved. I'm not 100% on that, but someone did.
He's definitely flexing or just completely hung.
Or hung or and loaded.
Both. Yeah, or
but,
loaded.
I think it might have something to do with that. But anyway, Cale Makar, 102.5.
It's not bad.
Not bad.
Rips it like you.
You know what surprised me in the hardest shot was JT Miller.
Yeah.
He shot 100 too. Like, I know he's a snipe, like he can snipe it, but man, that's hard.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Like, I didn't expect that. These sticks. Can you imagine if he had a Tovey? Definitely 107.
107 on hook.
For sure, 107. Hook. What about the accuracy? See Okonzie there?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking buried it pretty quick, just like you.
Yeah, happens.
Four up, four down.
It's the way I'd like to do it, you know?
Well, we saw our boy Chief do it. He got two practice ones out of the way.
Right, yeah,
and then buried those. But
might have been pretty ugly, I'm sure.
Yours? You think? With that Tovey in your hand?
Yeah, well, it'd be hard, but I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't hit the net at all. But anyway, pretty cool weekend. It's fun to watch. Not sure about what Biebs was wearing there, the one on the bench. But one of my favorite things was Jimmy Montgomery jumping up and down. I love Monty, man. That was just cool. And he had his son there, so it was a father-son weekend for him. And we had dinner, a couple weeks. Well, the weekend of the alumni game, and he was looking forward to him and his son his son's old enough now to really appreciate it.
Yeah,
I wish I could have taken Elvis when I was fortunate enough to do it, but he was so young. Like, he would have loved
it. Quite the experience,
but it would have been tough to get. Yeah. You know, with him and the late nights.
Late nights.
Real late. Yeah. Anyway, McDavid walks away. He needed it. I mean, he needed the mill. You know. I think P.K. Subban asked him, how's it feel to be a millionaire?
Yeah.
What a great question. Oh, man.
What do you think of Biebs' crossovers?
Ooh.
You see him ripping around out there?
I had seen him, man. He actually played in the celebrity game I met him.
Is that when Prongs was elbowed him into the glass at first?
And smiling at the camera. Yeah, that was fucking great. What a picture that was.
He moves all right.
Yeah, he's all right. I mean, shit. Not bad. I don't know how much time he has to.
Yeah, I know, play right? Hockey, yeah, he's got a little sheet in the studio.
He probably has one in the crib.
Why would
I think he's got enough money. He probably has a
recording while he's skating.
singing. I wonder if Marner and the boys go over and Matthews and them, and they skate around with him, work on it. We might be able to get you here in TO.
Yeah.
Get you a 10-day PTO.
Just get him around for the morale.
He's wearing that coat. Obviously, that coat must be something cool, but, like, my God.
Is that his brand?
I don't know. I know Debo has the green one, not the pink, but he can pull it off. I don't even know if Biebs could pull that thing off.
I think you need to fire up some Nasty Knuckles merch with that.
With that?
Yeah, why not? Fuck. Remove a few?
We could. I mean, we could, I guess. If the people want it, we'll do it.
If the people want it.
I know there's one thing you are so fired up about, and it's back.
It's back.
It's like David Boreanaz back. Yeah. What is it?
It's the national play.
How do you go about that? Hey? It's
a lot of work.
Oh, my God. Oh, a lot of work, boys. It is back, and Riggs is fired up. Four Nations face off, buddy. US, Canada. It's been a long time coming, boys. US, Canada, Finland, and Sweden.
Oh, man.
What a tourney. Are we going? I think Nasty Knuckles. I think we got to take the trip for that one. I don't even know where it is. Baller, where is it? Boston. Do we know? It's in.
Oh, we got to go.
Call Monty. Monty, we're going to come crash, bring in the crew. Go for the, I mean, it's back.
Why wouldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's back. Holy shit.
National play.
2025. They announced that NHL players will be able to participate also in the 2026 and 2030 Olympics,
ooh,
which is cool. And also World Cup coming back, 28 and 2032. Wow,
big news.
That is big news. That was fun. I enjoyed that. I got to do two World Cups, and they were fun. Yeah, except, yeah. Well, the second one wasn't so much fun because we didn't win a game. But U.S., but we'll be back.
You're
just
back,
like, yeah, the Four Nations. hey, last night, big dub. Flyers needed a win.
Oh, snap
night.
It. Snap that streak.
Snap the streak.
That's the way to,
TK with a sweet little goal, and then Cates with a winner, and our buddy Stoli in that played well.
Yeah.
Sam had a really good game.
He needed that.
He had lost four straight, and it wasn't all on him at all by any means, but he needed a win.
Yeah.
He needed a win. The Flyers needed a
win. Boys needed a win, yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty pumped about it, too. You could tell. They were like, whew, all right, let's get back at it. Tough game coming up tomorrow, though. Mm-hmm. Your boys coming into town.
The old Jets all fired up.
You're going to go in there and paint your face and
probably
have the jerseys on and everything.
Fresh body there, too.
Fresh body.
No. Monahan?
Monty? They got traded. Big trade. You went ahead and announced it. Sean Monahan gets traded to Winnipeg. You're correct. For a first and third round pick. He's kind of picked it back up. He had a tough go there in Calgary. And I think he was hurt. He was hurt because someone yelled at me. They sent in something saying, hey, he's hurt. Well, my apologies. He was. But he's been playing pretty well. You get a first round pick for him. It'll be interesting. I think we'll probably be at that gang. Kings. Dewey, we talked about Doughty kind of calling his teammates out. And you know who's going to go when this happens. And
the way it goes.
Yeah, they fire McClellan. And, man, I've never had him as a coach, but I've met him a bunch of times. And every team he's ever been on, I always talk to the equipment guys. It's like, this guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, what a guy. Old school type guy, but like a really good dude. I feel bad for him, man. It just keeps, like, I don't know, man. Like, they were playing really well. And then obviously, during the year, you're going to have those streaks. We've talked about it, but I guess they felt like they needed to make a move.
Yeah.
Old Blakey Poo.
Got a little eager, a little anxious. You got to pull the trigger sometimes.
They did.
Show the world you mean business.
Yeah.
You
know? They meant it.
Of course.
Canucks make a trade.
Yep. I don't know much about this Kuzmenko.
What?
Kuzmenko?
Yeah, there you go.
That's not me.
No, you're right. He had 39 tucks last year.
Did he? Yeah.
Yep. Not on that pace right now, but trading for Elias Lindholm.
All right.
So Canucks made some moves here lately, and they're pushing, man. They got a good team. We'll see what happens there. But
is that a good trade?
The trades... I think it's a good trade. I mean, I guess we'll find out. Like I said, he's not lighting it up like he was last year, so they obviously see something. So you got to trust your scouts, right?
You got to trust the scouts.
You got to trust them, and they do have a good team, so it'll be interesting. Oilers finally lost the game. Knobber, watch out for your job.
Oh, man,
they're 16-1 after 17 games. Not just kidding. But, man, 16 games. I watched the game. I stayed up because it was, 1-1, and I'm like, I got to see what happens.
I was hoping that they would break that record.
I kind of did, too. I was pulling for it.
That's a hard thing to do, dude.
Man, that many. I mean, someone said to me the other day, we were talking about their streak, and they're like, well, I haven't played. I know it was, but I don't want to say it was.
They didn't play hard
they
teams?
They haven't been playing. I'm like, it doesn't matter. No. At this day and age in the league, you can lose to anyone any night. Yeah. We know that.
You don't win 16 games by accident.
Yeah, right. So, anyway, they lost last night. We'll see what happens now. See if they can,
bounce back.
Yeah, bounce back. How would you go about that for next game?
Bounce back with another win, I guess.
You got to bounce back.
Back on the train. Got a little announcement, Nast.
Oh, yeah. The old Nasty Knuckles Golf Classic.
Oh, yeah.
It's indoor. 5-iron golf in Fishtown. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. I'm excited.
Are you bringing your own clubs?
No, I'm probably going to be using rentals.
Rentals?
Well, I guess. What else they got?
You can use Pac-Man's. He says he's going to be there. February 21st, 6:30, it starts. Should be so much fun. Place is great. It's awesome. We got a lot of people coming, hopefully.
Was it presented by Nast?
Garage Beer. Who else? Bam.
There we go.
What a summer beer. I drank the whole case the other night myself. Sorry if I got problems. It was so good, dude. I'm not kidding you, man. Oh, my God. It's good.
So good.
It's
a summer. The seasons have changed.
Well, it was still good, even though it's not summer yet. But can't wait to do that, man. It's going to be so much fun. We've been looking forward to this. Finally can announce it. We want everybody to come out, compete against us. You better go hit some balls because I've already had tax people were coming after you and Riggs. I'm like, God. Huh, have you seen Riggs hit the ball?
Yeah.
Well. If you take your time, but listen, come play against us. We're gonna have giveaways. It's gonna be a fun night, man.
You gonna check out the swing?
I've seen that swing. Everybody's seen it. Debo is wearing black pants, black sweatshirt. We're indoor though, Debo.
Indoor, so
you can actually
good.
Wear your shorts today. Or today. You can wear your shorts that night. It'll be awesome. We'll put more info out as we go along here, but it's in a couple weeks and I can't wait. Everybody come join us. It's gonna be a blast. It's gonna be a blast. It's just fun just watching Riggs swing your club. So
we're gonna warm up for the spring and summertime.
Women, men, everybody come on out. It's gonna be a blast. We have some garage beer there. A little tasty.
A few
other
of our partners, including our friends at Fans of Philly.
That's right.
Leading
can't wait.
Into...
Oh, you know what's coming up.
Oh, real quick. Where is it? Throw it on. What a
right there, baller. Fans of Philly. MetLife.
Stadium Series.
Bus A. We're Bus A, baby. Oh, we got our crew there. We got the Bugs of Rooney.
What time does the bus show up?
Now, that I don't know.
Oh, well, might want
to
get a
you don't
sketchy.
Need to take the, I have a sketch.
You're not taking the bus?
Yeah, I'm taking the bus. Oh. I don't have the sketch, though. Oh. I do have it, but I don't remember exactly what time to leave. I think like 1 or something.
All right.
But that is going to be a blast as well. That's before our golf outing.
Yes,
but
it is.
It's going to be exciting. Fans of Philly, can't wait, man. 8 buses full.
8 buses
going.
Eh? Wow.
What a
no
party.
Joke.
Bringing a table. Debo's coming off the top of the bus, lighting the table, baller. Bring the lighter fluid. We're not, and you know what I'm gonna do? Pull a cowboy flat. I'm lighting that beard. No. It'll be gone.
Couldn't do that.
I gotta do it.
It'll be very much fun.
It will for me.
No.
Third degree burns. Yeah, just right. Anyway, man, can't wait for the Nasty Knuckles golf event.
Yep.
5-iron. Can't wait.
All right, Nas, we're ready.
We're ready.
Ready to rock 146. Their friend Corey Hirsch.
That's right. Hershey,
former pick of the New York Rangers.
That's right.
Spent a little time in Philly.
He did with the Phantoms.
Let's go talk to him.
Let's go.
All right. This episode is brought to you by Garage Beer. Check out their beer-flavored beer. Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. This week, we are happy to have a good buddy joining us. Our podcast today was drafted Riley in 1991 entry draft by the Rangers, 8th round, 169th overall. Same draft Big E was selected number one in. What a shit show that was. great junior career, WHL, Kamloops, Mem Cup, CHL goalie of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Not a big deal. Won a silver medal in the Olympics. Over 100 NHL games. This guy is a coach, he's a published author. Public speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, he's a huge advocate for mental health.
Yes.
And used to be the lead singer of a band called Simply Red. our good buddy, Corey Hirsch. What's up, brother?
Oh, great to see you guys. Nasty, it's been a long time. You have not changed a bit. just to tell everyone, I had a small stint with the Philadelphia Phantoms at the end of one season for about a month. So I got to know everybody in the organization, got to see how the organization was run. And I think the biggest takeaway from my time there was I remembered seeing one of Homer and Clarkie's famous meetings, player meetings.
Those were interesting and intense most of the time.
Eye protection required.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was a good one. And a quick little story about that. I remember him going, we're all sitting in the room and I think it was Pavel Brendel. Was it Brent? Is that his name?
Yes.
Pavel Brendel. And he had requested a trade because he was in the minors, thought he was an NHL player. And Clarkie comes over and he's going, you know, he's giving it to everybody because we weren't playing well and we weren't winning. And he's like, Brendel, you wanted a trade? I got you on fucking speed dial. Nobody fucking wants you.
Right. He turned in. You remember. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. And I just got there. I'd been there like 4 days. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, Pav was like, his heart rate didn't get much.
Kind of like Kucherov 50. In the All-Star game. Yeah, there.
Like Kucherov this weekend in the All-Star skills. But he's right. Hershey's right. He came in and he said, first thing he said was, first off, Pletka, you're done. Get out of here. Go upstairs. See Diana. No, you're out of here. And he's like looking around. He goes, go.
Like mid-game.
And so he leaves. And just like Hershey says, he goes, Pav, you're asking for a trade. You're on speed dial. Nobody wants you.
Wow.
Like that. And Pav's like, just zero respect. He's like leaning back. He's like, oh, like that. Boys are like, holy cow, man. You walk right into it. He's just getting there and he has to come into that. No. Like, oh, shit. Sorry, bro.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Pletka. Yeah, I remember that. He wanted to trade too or something, right?
Yeah, it was crazy.
And then he went after Gregor and Whitey, I think. And
He used to call them like, the I sisters, the IHL, because they
were soft. Yeah, they were like, oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you can back up that story because
I'll never forget that one, bro.
Yeah.
Never forget that one.
To walk into a shitstorm for five games.
Right away. So Hershey, man, like you said, man, it's been a while, buddy. What's going on? What are you up to? Where are you living? Yeah. Let us know what's going on.
Well, I'm in Vancouver. I did the radio for the Canucks for about 5-6 years. And then I've gone full time into the realm of mental health. And for me, that's where my heart lies, trying to heal myself, trying to like help other people. For anybody out there, my story, my book is called The Save of My Life. I struggled with obsessive compulsive disorder when I played, and then moving forward, panic attacks and all that stuff. So, my goal now is to try and help other people so that they reach out, especially men, right? Like we don't typically ask for help. We'll just go through our shit and we'll let it happen. We're scared of what our buddies will think or what, someone else will think. I always say this, like, I'm more scared of who I would be if I didn't ask for help. Who gives a fuck what my buddies think, right?
Yeah, like, right.
Yeah,
good point.
Go get the help if you need it. And I try to be a living proof of that. If you do, hey, shit gets better, man. Like life gets better. That's been my role right now. And then, my second thing that I've always wanted to do is get on the Nasty Knuckles podcast.
Yeah, here you are.
I'm on.
You're living a dream. Doing it.
I'm living the dream. So I shout out to my good buddy, Cat, Chris Felix, who had passed. Love being Riley. Riles and I, we talked about him a little bit and just what a good dude he was and missed. But man, I think about him. I got a smile on my face every time I think about the guy.
Yeah. Same with me. I was with him when he left us and, I literally think about him every day, like something pops in my head and, I'm real close with his, Kim, his wife and his two boys, Colin, is playing pro. And Colby's doing real well in college. Great people. You're right, man. It just puts it. He always seemed to put a smile on your face, man. That guy, he was loud. You could hear him down the hallway. He was just great. And that laugh he had, but we miss him. We miss him. I appreciate you bringing him up because he's a great man.
What a huge heart. And a little quick story about Cat. Cause I met him in Binghamton. We were playing Binghamton.
Yeah.
One of our minor league games was on ESPN or something or one. And he had just kind of broke in and I'm like, Cat, you ever been on TV before? He's like, no. I'm like, tell your parents to watch. And he's like, what? Okay. So the game starts about second period. Someone crashes into me. And I fucking flail. I go down, right? Pretend I'm hurt. Like I'm laying there.
Yeah.
Cat, ice, right? Cameras. I'm like, and my cat goes, Hershey, all right? I'm like, Cat, say hi to your mom and dad.
Come on. That's great.
That's awesome, man.
Anyway, we both just fucking laughing. Yeah. And I was like, Cat, I'm fine.
That's so great.
And we had a bond like that. Just what a great dude. And just a huge heart. right? Just the biggest heart in the world. So absolutely.
Yeah. Was that your first year? Was that 92 when you were with Cat?
That was there 93, 94.
It was
my last year I was in Bingo. Then I got traded to Vancouver.
Right.
After that I got traded to Vancouver. Yeah. So I think it was like 94-ish. I was with the Rangers during the Stanley Cup. So I was the third goalie. I was a roster member. Got to hold the cup. I don't have my name or anything on the cup, but I was roster member. I got to see how it was done. Madison Square Garden, you know.
That's awesome.
It's fucking
unbelievable. And just got to be part of that. But my time with the Flyers and playing against the Flyers, I was just thinking of another Big E story. I remember when he first came to Oshawa, he was 16 years old, played against him in the Memorial Cup. And he dominated. So we went 1990, went to the Memorial Cup in Hamilton. We were supposed to win. Oshawa beats us like 8-6. I was terrible. But people were like, well, why doesn't somebody just grab, he's 16. Why doesn't someone just grab him and beat the shit out of him?
Right.
And you're like, you fucking kidding me? He was like 6'4", 240.
He looked like a grown man.
Yeah, he did.
Like in junior hockey as a 16-year-old, right? Like he had a man's body. Like, because he can't. You know? We used to play the Flyers in Vancouver on New Year's all the time. And Nasty, I think you might have still been in the minors. It was probably might have been your dad that was the trainer, but we used to call it the New Year's Day Massacre because Philly would come in and they would just fucking destroy us like 8 or 9 to 1 on New Year's, you know, every fucking year. So that's my other Flyers story that I remember in the Big E, just fucking just barreling down on people. John LeClair standing in front of me. I'm 165 pounds. John LeClair standing in front of me. Like, I'm not moving him. Where would you like to stand, Mr. LeClair?
Wherever you want.
Just carve out a little place for him.
You know what's funny, Hershey, is I was actually with my first year in the league was with Florida Panthers. And then my next two, I was in NHL. So the first time I ever saw you was in Van. Exactly. Cause I was there in 96. And I was telling Riles earlier, I said, I was standing down beside my dad on the bench and you know, you had the red locks and they're a little bit of a flow going.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, and that's why I said about Simply Red, the band, cause I used to love, they had a few hits and I loved them. And my dad goes, he's saying something to me and I turn around and I look and I see you. I said, oh, that's the lead singer from Simply Red. I didn't know you. I knew who you were, but I didn't know you yet. I'd never met you, obviously. That's why I said that. But I was going to say your first year pro coming off a very great junior career. You go 35-4-5. Your rookie year, man. That's fucking impressive, man.
Yeah,
you know, you're playing with men now. I think you ended up being AHL the goalie of the year. I think you won the award, right?
Yeah. I was up for player of the year. I won goalie of the year. I won rookie of the year. Like I just got on a tear. Won the Memorial Cup the year before. That year, you know, then the following year was in the Olympics, got a silver medal. Then won the cup with the Rangers, but it was like I just went on an absolute tear. But then it was during the Stanley Cup run with the Rangers I got sick. So if you want to dip into my story a little bit, it was during the Rangers Cup run, we're in the second round when things just kind of went dark, and started getting really obsessive, repetitive thoughts. People think people with OCD are all the hand washers and all that. How cute that is or whatever. I do everything in my head, so you can't outwardly see it. From there, I got really sick. We won the Stanley Cup, and then I blew out of there. I didn't even go to the ticker tape parade, guys. Like because
really,
I was having panic attacks, depression, so I go home thinking the shit's gonna go away. And it doesn't go away. And I don't want to drag down the interview here, but I'll tell you a little bit of what happened. And then, so I run to Kamloops and the Rangers are kind of like their brass is like getting an idea, like what the fuck's wrong with this guy? Who doesn't stick with, you must be disgruntled or something. Right.
Right.
And it was like the furthest thing from that. So about 2 weeks. So now we're probably end of July in 94. And, this shit's not going away. And I'm hanging out with my buddies. I'm at a bar in Kamloops and I'm looking for help or hope or anything and nothing, there's nothing there. And I actually end up making a suicide attempt. Wow. I tell the story because it's going somewhere. I'm not trying to drag down the podcast.
Yeah, right, no, right. Sure.
So unsuccessful, of course, but I suffered for another 3 years in silence. You know, I get to training camp the next year. Rangers are trying to move me because they don't know what's wrong with me, or they just think I'm a bad guy. They moved me to Vancouver. I go to Vancouver, Nasty, and my first year in the NHL in Vancouver. And I say this, so people think that people with mental health issues are weak. I made the NHL with a full-blown, struggling, everyday panic attack, mental health issues. You're not weak just because you have mental health issues. It's beyond that. But from there, I always say this, and I'll tell the story quickly. My second year in Vancouver, and I say this because I want people to get help, the shit goes off the rails, right? Like, I didn't go get help for my stuff. And it's like a broken leg. You can't just walk around with a broken leg for 3 years and nothing happens. Like, you got to get it fixed. So we're in New York in New Jersey on the island. And I'll tell you the story. And I'm back on my fucking knees where I was, like, when I was with New York, when I first got sick, like panic attacks, and I can't do this anymore. I'm like, okay, well, I got two choices here. I can reach out and get help, or this time plan B and we can really get it done. And that was how my thought was in my brain. It was November of my second season with Vancouver, and we were in New York. We played New York one night, we played New Jersey the next night, and Kirk McLean's hurt and I got to play the games. And I'm like, I dropped 30 pounds. I was 145 pounds.
Jeez.
Wow.
You know, so my teammates are looking at me like, what the fuck's wrong with this guy? I remember going in the shower and coming out, Marty's yelling. It looks at me, goes, Hershey, what's wrong with you? And I'm trying to hide from everybody, right? Because it's a guy's locker room and all that stuff. So the next morning we're in the island and I'm like, I can't fucking do this anymore. So I go get the trainer, Mike Bernstein, and I pull him way away from everybody. And I'm like, Bernie, I'm not doing very well. And he's like, Hershey, we can see that. I'm like, no, Bernie, I'm fucking suicidal, right? And Bernie, his face, I remember, he's like, holy shit, just went white. He's like, Hershey, okay, you got to play. Just get ready to play. I'll take care of this, okay? And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I just go, I play that, right? I play that night. I'm fucking terrible. I get in a fight. We lose 5-4 in overtime. My teammates are really starting to hate me now because I'm late for meetings. I'm not hanging out with the guys. I'm 140. Like I'm just the shell of a human being. The next day we go into New Jersey and I got to play again back to back. We have a morning skate that next morning. And I remember in the morning skate, guys are shooting pucks at me. I can't see pucks. Like I'm having like dissociation, out of body experience. It's like when you have so much anxiety, the brain is just, it's fried. And I skate over the coach, Tom Rennie, and I'd never pulled myself from a game. I'm like, Tom, I can't play. And Tom's like, okay, Hershey, I got this. Go in the locker room, change. I'll figure this out, whatever. I go over to Tom Rennie. He calls, like, I'm in the locker room. I change. Tom Rennie calls an emergency meeting with all the players. And I'm in the corner and I've got my head in my knees. I'm 145 pounds. I'm a shell of a human being. Like I'm suicidal again. Like I'm on the edge. Like I'm hanging by a thread. And in this locker room, all my teammates are sitting there. They come off the ice. They're like, what the fuck's going on? My teammates are like Pavel Bure, Trevor Linden, Russ Courtnell, all these guys, Yerky Lume, Dave Babich, all these guys that were Alex McGillney, friends of mine and peers. And I'm a shell of a human being. And Tom Rennie comes in and goes, hey, Hershey's not doing well. Mike Fountain's going to start. If anybody asks, he's got the flu, right? And it was just the most embarrassing, shameful moment of my life. But nobody knew what to do about mental health. Like nobody knew what to do.
Right.
Right. Like Tom didn't know what to do. So that was it. So I get on the bus and I come on the bus and I sit at the front of the bus because I'm so fucking embarrassed. Right. Like, and I'm just dying inside. And I remember looking out the window, my teammates are rolling by me. We're going back to the hotel for our pregame meal. And I remember looking out the window, I had a tear rolling down my face because I knew I'd just throw my NHL career away, right? And I say this because I did, but I also saved my own life that day. I went back to Vancouver. They had a psychologist come to my apartment. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to tell this guy everything. And if he tells me I'm crazy, well, then fuck, plan B, we'll get her done. So I spill everything to this guy, and after about 20 minutes, he looks at me and goes, you have obsessive compulsive disorder. I'm like, what? What the fuck is that? He's like, well, it's a mental health issue. And you know, it's not treatable or it's not curable, but it's treatable. You're going to go on, you're going to live a great life. We'll get you treatment, medication, whatever you need. And I just sat there bawling in front of him because 3 years, a suicide attempt, you know, almost killed myself again because I didn't go get help. I didn't ask for help. Right. Mm-hmm. And it would have been so simple just to go ask for help. So from there, it wasn't easy. It was 10 years before I found someone that could truly help me. Another 10 years before my story came out in the Players Tribune, which I talked about everything. So it was 20 years till I felt comfortable enough to tell my story. And I say this to you guys, that article in the Players Tribune, 2 million hits in under an hour. And I was terrified.
Wow.
Suicide attempt. It's still one of the biggest hitting articles they've ever had. Like LeBron James, Tiger Woods. Here's a kid from Calgary, 100 NHL games, and my article hit as hard as that. So, you know, since then, and this is where I'm kind of going all with all of this is that, you know, I'm living proof that if you get help, it gets better, right? Just go get the help. But since then, I've gone into the realm of like psychedelics, plant medicine, you know, with traditional therapy. And I got to do some work with Riley here in the past little bit. And it was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had. I feel like a completely different, with my healed, no, but I have such a different outlook with plant medicine than I've ever had in my life. And it's like, man, I wish I would have tapped into the stuff when I was a player, you know. And Riley, I'll let you speak too about it. But it's like, you know, I wish we could get more people and more, you know, it's not legal in some places, it's legal in others. But it's such a great way to heal, and it's the path that a lot of people are going. And I'm excited, you know, for the first time in a long time again about my mental health.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Long way to go about it.
Yeah.
So fucking cool. I'm in such a great place now. And I'm so happy that, again, you know, I couldn't see it tomorrow. I couldn't see it. There's people out there listening right now that I know you can't see it tomorrow. There is a tomorrow. Just get there and get there however you can, you know. And I've just been so happy to work with you, Riley. And then again, to see you again, Nasty, like 20 years later.
I know. I wish you were in the studio. It'd be great. But we'll eventually, yeah, we're going to catch up.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
too bad we were in Vancouver last year too, Riley and I.
Yeah, well, we have to make another trek out there.
One of our sponsors takes us on trips, yeah, but yeah, we'll definitely do that. And I got a question, Hershey, if you don't mind. And it may be a dumb question, but you said – in that second round, you've been pro, right? You're with the Rangers. Yeah. Is that when it first hit you, or did you, younger, did you ever like feel a little off, but no big deal, but it just hit you like that right out of nowhere?
Yeah. OCD is a little bit different, like depression, trauma, PTSD, that'll creep up on you. There are, like, when I look back though, there's things when I was a kid, that happened, that I got little bits of it, but it didn't quite catch, you know?
Right.
And then I went on with stuff, but then it's almost like, it's like the wires frayed when I was a kid. And then that moment in New York was just like the wires disconnected. Like it just broke.
Just the stress of the situation. You think it was stress related, or?
I think you're predestined with, you know, I think a lot of it's genetics. Like, you know, like there's people in my family that have OCD. My daughter has OCD. And here's what I say for your listeners is that, like, my daughter, when she was 15, she came to me and she's like, "Dad, something funky's going on," because we always talked about mental health in our house, because I said, "Hey, you come to me." We went and we got her, to a psychologist. She gets diagnosed with OCD. So here's the point of that story is because we talked about it, my daughter will never get to the place I got to where I wanted to take my own life. Right. Yeah. Just because. Right. So that's the importance of education on mental health is, it, you know, may have saved my daughter's life. Well, mm-hmm. And all we did was have a conversation. Right.
Like, yeah.
And made it a safe place for her to come to. She still struggles, but she knows what she does. And, you know, and that's my point of why we need to tell our kids, man, and all that. You know, it's such a huge thing, but such an easy thing to talk about.
Yeah.
It must have been so scary for you. I mean, like when this happened, you're still really a kid. I mean, you were young.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're a kid. I mean, I just can't imagine. I mean, obviously, yeah, I can't imagine the way you were feeling, but it had to be a scary fucking thing, man.
Oh, it's terrifying. Well, the worst part is how lonely you feel, because you feel like you're the only one, because and that's probably the worst part of it. And then not being able to ask for help, because you've been taught that, you know, asking for help is a sign of weakness, or asking for help, everyone's going to think you're crazy if you ask for help. Right. Like, so you just, there was the toss up between my NHL career and getting help and getting healthy. And I chose my NHL career, which, you know, which over self, you know, it almost killed me. Like,
yeah.
So, and if I would have just been able to go ask, I could have had both. Right. Like, I could.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
That was the time. That's what it was. We're in a much better time right now. Yeah. And just, you know, like I said, and working with, you know, some of the psychedelics and the new treatments that they have. And just, it's not only that, it's everything around it, eating better. You know, I went through a big thing of self-hate in the past couple of weeks, and I'm not going to get too hokey on you, but I had to really understand what everyone's like, oh, you just need to love yourself. You just got to love yourself, right? You know, go in the mirror, talk, tell yourself you love yourself 10 times. And I'm like, all right, fuck. Okay. So I do it. I'd be like, all right, I guess I love myself now. Fuck, let's go. No, right? Like,
yeah.
Think positive. You know, man, just think positive, you know?
Yeah.
But once you really delve into it, like I did with Riley, was, and we did a lot of integration and talk, was it's all about the little things you do for yourself, is like eating well, exercise, you know, like, you know, and getting shown all of that. That's what self-love is, right? Just, and it was really cool. It's trying to change my perspective. But anyways, let's tell some hockey stories. Fuck.
Yeah. Well, I did want to say, like, we appreciate you being, you know, being vulnerable. And yeah. Like, that is the most important piece here, I think, is being comfortable enough to open up and ask for help, because we live in a different time than when you played, right? The mental health thing wasn't even really talked about. So I can see these organizations, like especially the Rangers, being like, what the hell do we even do? We don't know. And, you know, so it's probably both sides scary, and, you know, things have changed. So I think for any of the listeners out there, you know, it's never a bad time to ask for help. In fact, you could save, you know, so much time and years off your life if you do it sooner than later, and you could preserve both, right? I mean, you could have had both, like you said, but you're a voice for mental health, you know, Canada, US, everywhere, and you're constantly evolving. You're not just, you know, stuck or, you know, staying the same and happy with it. I think you're constantly looking for more and knowing that there's more out there. So you know, props to you for putting yourself out there and staying committed, because that's, to me, the most important piece.
Yeah, and absolutely. And also, talent kept me from being a better goalie too. Talent and size. Fucking 5'10". Goalies are like 6'7" now. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right?
We're the biggest guys on the team, right? I mean, remember Bernie? Like, what's Bernie?
5'10"? Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, I know, right?
Like, fucking, and great goalies. My favorite goalie, though, was Pelle Lindbergh. Nasty. Yes. Maybe you would have met Pelle, wouldn't you? That's why, I mean, I love Pelle. Like, that's...
I met Pelle. He was really close with my dad.
Oh.
That's Pelle. He signed it. It says, to cool Derek, best wishes, Pelle Gump Lindbergh.
Oh, and fuck, that is
the reason he said to cool Derek was because for my birthday, I was a big basketball... I don't know if we ever talked about it, but I was a big basketball. Yeah. I played basketball in college, and it's my favorite sport. But he got Daryl Dawkins, Chocolate Thunder, the guy who used to break the backboards. I don't know if you're aware of him, but he signed a picture for me, and it said, to cool Derek, look out below, here's a birthday dunk for you. And so Pelle thought it was hilarious, so he wrote, to cool Derek. So that's a possession I love. I actually have Pelle's travel bag from the 80 Olympics. And it is in mint condition because I put it in plastic. I still have it. Yeah, wow. I still have it, but... Yeah, he was really cool. And him and my dad lived together 1 year in Maine. And then when he got called up to the Flyers, I used to come up a lot to see my dad. And I would spend a night with Pelle, and we'd like go to a movie and stuff like that. So I knew him pretty well. Like, yeah, he was a great guy, man. So sad. But
yeah, so Bob Froese was my goalie coach in New York. So you know Frost.
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah. But like growing up, like Pelle was like, that's, I mean, you know, like we idolize. I mean, I had Mike Palmateer when I was younger, but Pelly was like when it, that was my teen years. Like that's who I wanted to be, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. And they, you know, when I talked to Bob a little bit about the Flyers teams back then, he said, you know, obviously Pelly's tragedy was changed a lot of things, but he said, fuck guys. Yeah. It was like, you know, they were tough teams, you know,
yeah.
And they played hard and they went hard too. Right.
Like, yes, they did. They did. Yeah. You know? I mean, it was back then, it was right after practice or I mean, they were right. Oh, well, that was one of the issues was they had a bar upstairs and the boys would just go right up, you know, and then
you're
right inside the Coliseum, the old Coliseum there. But yeah, he was a great guy. He was one hell of a goalie too.
Yeah. Well, I idolized him. Yeah.
We have this, one of our big sponsors is Clear Rum. And, we do this, thing with, Clear Questions. And one of them was, the most skilled player and who I thought was one of the most skilled players. And Riley goes number 32, which was his number of the Flyers. And I said, Daniel Lacroix. Well, hey, Daniel Lacroix played with in Bingo. He had 100 points.
Yeah.
And so did the Fonz, Fiorentino. I actually have one of his jerseys. Doomy gave me one of his jerseys. Yeah.
Wow.
So when you said that, it's kind of funny because he actually in American League, he scored 100 points.
Wow, that's really good.
Oh, fuck. I was talking to Riley about Frank the Animal by Lois. And now there was a point where he was more popular than Lindros in Philly, was there not?
It was crazy. He had billboard. Like, yeah. The guy had a billboard. Philadelphia's American Hockey League guy. That place, I'll tell you what, he should have got paid a lot more because he was responsible for that building being packed all the time. I mean, he really was.
Yeah,
it was funny, Hershey, because Billy Barber's coaching, right? And we would be up, you know, we had really good teams there early on, really good teams early on. And the place would be packed, and they're always either chanting Animal, because, you know, or We Want Frank. So there'd be like seven, you know, just once in a while, like, you know, whistle goes 7 seconds and the whole building, We Want Frank. And Frankie would be sitting there kind of laughing and everybody's just watching. Billy's like, all right, go ahead, but don't do anything stupid. Yeah, okay. Frankie, 17,000 people are yelling his name and he'd grab some poor bastard, just beat the shit out of him.
Oh,
but he's still a popular guy around here. He's actually been on the show a couple times and we still have people going, we need a 3.0 with the Animal.
Oh, like, yeah.
We want him back.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. Yeah. And I mean, you know, just those guys though, like the job that they had, like the Riley, even you, like, you know, with the job you guys had, I can't imagine the stress of having to fucking go into every game and look across and you know, knowing you got to fight someone and they're terrified of you and you're terrified of them, you know, how do you know, like the stress of that, Riley, like how have you gotten past any of that? Like, I'm doing the interview now, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Right? That's fine.
That's a great question. Man, I think to get through it at the time, there was obviously a lot of coffee, a lot of stimulants, a lot of kickball to take my mind off it, a lot of partying, you know, just the, again, at the time, you're just finding ways to cope because you don't know any better, right? You've never understood stress at that level. You understand even the states of anxiety that you're in. So, you know, it was just finding ways to get through. And but then, you know, when I retired, it was just like, this weight just fell right off. You know, it was an opportunity to breathe and just to find peace in it all. Right. Cause you never really fully settle during a hockey season. Cause the fight's over. You could be fighting again that game and you're just, and, or worrying about tomorrow's fight, depending who you're playing, you know? So yeah, it was just, it was just one of those things you just dealt with. Eventually it took its toll. It just fried my nervous system. It was just like, it was just a lot. Always thinking about it. So I don't miss that piece of it, but you know, the fight itself was the most enjoyable part because like, that was the easy part.
Can you imagine saying that Hershey fight,
right?
George LaRocque was the most enjoyable part of it.
I mean, thinking about getting my ass whooped by George LaRocque was worse than
try taking a nap, right? Like Hershey, like knowing you're going to probably fight George LaRocque. We've talked about this a million times. People always ask that, but
yeah,
it's crazy.
Well, we talked about Brashear. I played with Brash in Vancouver, and I never saw him.
I never saw him lose a fight. Like, I didn't see him lose one fight. I saw him actually almost kill somebody, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, and you had talked, you had fought him a couple times too, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I think at least four times. But yeah, he sealed my eyes up pretty good the one time. Yeah, man, he was just one of those guys you fight, and it's like you're just fighting out of survival. It's just like just making sure your head doesn't get knocked off, right? Because he's just that much bigger and heavier, and you know, just a mutant. But I knew Brash too, right? I mean, I trained with him, and it was just business. But I don't miss that. You know, it was it was a lot.
The love hug that he used to get guys in, he'd get you in the love hug.
Yeah, well, I didn't mind the love hug until he started throwing bombs to the side of the head, and you know.
What else has been interesting is Mike Tyson has gone into a lot of the realm of natural healing.
Yeah,
and that's pretty cool to see. Like, and to think of who he was when he was younger to who he was today is it's pretty cool. You know, how did you get it started and all that stuff, Ross?
It was all around the brain and concussion related stuff. So that's how I got introduced to all this. It was so much more than that, right? I mean, the physical is one piece, right? Healing the brain, the anti-inflammatories, the neuroregeneration. But I think like beyond that, it was the esoteric, the more the spiritual. It just helps you evolve past your old identity and kind of have some closure and some peace in your past and what you did and your struggles and your traumas and you know, kind of have a little bit of a new perspective moving forward. So it's been an interesting ride for sure. And to see a guy like, you know, Mike Tyson is arguably one of the baddest dudes on the planet, becoming so gentle and, you know, and having that forgiveness and acceptance and just constantly doing the work, right? It's one of those paths that never ends, right? It's just kind of forever. So just find new ways to optimize and stay well. But yeah, just now just trying to just help people as much as I can. You know, we connected over a year ago, so it was nice to kind of reconnect and do some more immersive work, because I think there's more to it than just the psychedelics, right? We have to, as you alluded to earlier, just have more of a relationship with our physical bodies, a healthier one with our food and our thinking and our thoughts and all that good stuff. So, he never would have thought getting punched in the head for 8 years straight could have led you down this path, but it certainly did.
Nasty, when are we going to get you down the natural path?
Well, I'm on the natural path, yeah. I think. I think I'm on it, but
you got to be ready for it, you know?
Yeah, like, you got to be ready for it. But I'll tell you what, man, I'm so happy to see what you're doing. And obviously, I'm so proud of this guy. I've seen so many people he's helped with all this. And, you know, I don't use the right words, but I just say, dude, he's helping people. And I get a lot of friends now and just people I meet at the rink. I work with a junior team now. I have my own shop here, obviously, to do the podcast. Yep. And my son is a goalie, Hershey. So I'm dealing with that.
Yeah.
He's nine. But I get tons of people come up to me and ask me, you know, like, hey, do you think Riles will talk to me? I'm like, dude, he'll talk to anybody. But it's awesome to see what you guys do, because I think a lot of people, we probably said this before, but a lot of people look at you guys as athletes, obviously, and they don't understand you're humans.
That's it.
You know, some do, but you know what I mean, Hershey. Well, you get paid a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. You're human beings. And it's really cool to see what you guys are doing. And I've seen Riley, I've just a lot of buddies, a lot of guys, ex-players that he's really done a lot for. And it's really cool to see, man. Really is.
No, I agree. I mean, he's helped me so much and like changed my life, right? Like, like really helped me, and just a lot of it, just learning so much from the knowledge he has, and just being able to see Riley, like, you know, like you're fucking tough, man. Like, you had to fight some tough dudes, and to know that, you know, just being able to help people like you have, and just it's really fucking cool. I'm so grateful for it. But without getting really fucking mushy, and I'd love to hug both of you.
But yeah. let's get back to telling some more.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So what was I gonna? I was getting ready to ask him. Oh, I was gonna say you brought up the Olympics there too. Yeah. 30 saves. Yeah, great game. 30 saves in the semifinal when you were at the Olympics there, and then the gold medal game. I mean, that's probably a stinger, but 7 rounds, and I mean, yeah. I guess at least it's Forsberg. I think it's a goal, but I'll never forget that.
That's it. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, what was that like? I was fortunate enough to work with Team USA 2010 at the Olympics, and we lost in the gold medal game. Obviously, I wasn't a player. I was doing the equipment. But, man, that was one of the coolest things I've ever done in my life. Up top there, highlights. But I just wanted to ask you about that. Even though you weren't able to get the gold, you still got a silver medal and big part of that team.
Well, we were going into the Olympics. The U.S. kicked our ass every time. They had the Ferraro brothers. Peter Laviolette was on the blue line. Snowy was a goalie.
Yeah.
And they would kick our ass. And then right before Christmas, we got Paul Kariya and Peter Nedved joined our team. And that completely changed our team. I mean, two great players, right?
Yeah.
So we go to the Olympics. We get all the way to the finals against Sweden. U.S. got knocked off, I think, by Finland. And then so, which was great for us because we didn't play them very well, but yeah, we go 2-2 after overtime, after two periods, overtime, 10 minutes, 2-2, went to 5 shooters, shootout, you know, still tied 2-2, then went into sudden death shootout. And that's, the story kind of goes like this. So, Sweden shot first, and a guy named Magnus Svensson, he missed the net. I stopped him. And then Peter Nedved went on Tommy Salo. He missed. So now we're still in sudden death. And the coach of the Swedish team, I guess, asked Håkan Lubb and Mats Naslund if they wanted to shoot. They were like older veteran players that had Stanley Cups, right? Like they came back to Sweden to finish their careers playing in the Olympics. They wouldn't fucking shoot. They're like, nope. Hmm. And that's when 20-year-old phenom Peter Forsberg stood up and said, I'll shoot. And fucking goddamn Peter Forsberg. So he comes down on me, and he does that move with the backhand, which is now known as the Forsberg. And I was like, I said to Riley, like, do you know what the Forsberg is? He's like, yeah, fuck. I was like, do you know who scored it? He's like, yeah, well, Peter Forsberg. And I'm like, do you know who he scored on? He's like, no. Well, fuck, that was me, Riley.
That's unbelievable.
So Sweden wins gold. We win silver. But you know what? It's really cool because it was one of the greatest games, and it became it's world famous, right? So
it's
actually helped me be able to do what I do today, right? It gave me a platform. People remember, you know, from the Olympics. Like, it gave me a household name, you know, and that's, so it's kind of like, I look back, do I wish we had gold? Yeah, but fucking Peter Forsberg.
Yeah.
But no, you know, I got a silver medal, and that's pretty fucking cool.
That's,
you know?
Really, yeah, it's really,
and
cool.
You know, blessed to have it. And then, like I say, and then you know, 2 months later, although I got sick, you know, I'm holding the Stanley Cup, drinking out of the Stanley Cup, you know.
Awesome. Yeah, so, right.
I was just on an incredible run. It was like And again, I'm not going to get too hokey. The universe is like, we're going to show you everything. We're going to give you everything, but fuck, you're going to go through it now, you know? So it's like, you know, and it's all, you know, lessons I've learned and been able to, you know, and like I say, man, fuck. And just go get the fucking help if you're struggling. Like, you know, like your buddies don't care. And if they do, they're not your fucking buddies. Go find
them. Exactly.
Right. Like, so, because I couldn't imagine, let's say, you know, I did take my own life. I've got 3 kids. I've got fucking, you know, now stuff I couldn't see. I'm hanging out with you guys. And, you know, I mean, like things are fucking so awesome. And that's what I try and say is, I'm living proof. Just go get the fucking help.
Yeah.
Don't be a fucking, you know, you don't have to be tough. Just go get it. Like,
that's it.
Shame in it, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
I was going to ask you, you don't want to be on the Swedish stamp?
I forgot about the stamp.
Yeah, the stamp, yeah.
Fucking Peter Forsberg. Yeah, I'm on a Swedish postage stamp. I said, hey, listen to this one. So I'm playing in Sweden. I'm finishing my career, right, at the end of my career. So we were playing on the road. I think I was playing for Timrå or Malmö. Can't remember. But anyways, I had a bad period. We're on the road, and I'm coming off the ice, and I'm fucking pissed. We're down like 4-0 or something. And some fans looking over the, you know, yelling over the glass going, the stamp, And I looked up and I said, hey, buddy, you know what? Every time you use that fucking stamp, you're licking my ass. You know that?
Yeah, right.
Room, right.
That's awesome. That's like, that's a great way to. That's
yeah. Awesome. It was just, you know, every once in a while you get one yep. fucking. And
oh,
I was
you
like,
gotta go, oh, right?
Fuck, I was pissed. Yeah. But now I feel bad about saying that, but I'm sure.
Yeah, right. Was there a story involving that stamp, like where you had the ability actually of you being in it, and they you didn't yeah. allow them to have your likeness? Is that how that went?
Yeah, I didn't know how all that worked, right? But so they have to. You get paid for your likeness, right? You can't just use someone's, you know. So my agent was like, yeah, you know, you got to compensate us for using, you know, his likeness. He's not just going to give it to you. And then we never heard back from them, and they changed the number and a couple things. And I ended up getting some bad publicity out of it. And I was like, fuck, you know, I didn't really know I was a kid. Right.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But yeah, so that's how that ended up going. And that's how that ended up happening. But yeah, it all worked out. It's all good. And Riley, but it's like I say, all that stuff made me the ability to do what I do today.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's built that platform.
Yeah.
You give me a platform. So, you know, at the time you're like, you know, but now I'm like, I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful.
Yeah.
For it.
Right.
Through. Did it suck? Yeah. Do I still struggle? Yeah. Fuck. But I have gratitude for it because I'm like, you know, like look at the people. Like I just think I'm thankful. I get nasty. Fuck. It's been 20 years. Like,
I know, man.
I'm thankful we get to chat. I'm thankful I got to meet you. Right. You know, like,
yeah.
Now we get to tell stories about fucking Pelly Lindbergh and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty cool. And I get to meet Riley, you know, like I don't know if I should be grateful for that or not, but fucking no, best fucking thing I've ever done was connecting with Riley and just being able to just, you know, hear what he has to say, his philosophies, what he's learned and stuff. And it's just been, it's fucking awesome. So all good.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective when you talk about like darkness being the foundation for all the positive and the good you can do, right? Being of service. It's like at the time, it doesn't seem like, you know, like there's a purpose for it, right? But there always is. And you just have to, you know, work through the weeds a little bit to see that. And I think you obviously have done that and living it now. So props.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly it, man. You know, if you're going out there struggling right now, go get the help. If you need it, like, because something better is coming for you, right? I mean, you're learning your lesson right now. Something better is coming for you, you know. And just like you, Nasty, you're getting it right now because you're a goalie dad now. So you're getting.
Oh
yours.
Boy, man. What I worry about the most is like it being a 2-2 game and him letting Muffin in, and you don't know my son. He does. I don't know if it even bothered Elvie. My son's name's Elvis, but I worry about that. Maybe when he gets a little older, maybe it'll start, you know. But he's doing really well. I made a Triple A team this year here in Philadelphia Hockey Club. Yeah, he's doing well. He's got a great bunch of kids, great dads. We're lucky because you've probably seen it in Reeks, and I know Riley has. Some of these parents, man, they drive kids not to want to play hockey. But we've got a really, really good group, so it's a lot of fun. But I think I get nervous. He doesn't get nervous.
Are you that dad doing the old air catch or an air blocker?
Oh no, I'm just watching, and I just like Hershey. The music's going every puck stop. He's just dancing like he's a bit of a character. I have to send you a couple videos, but
you gotta be loose, man.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, loose. He's loose.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna ask you about when you went to Van, when you get traded. I was 95, I believe.
Yeah.
That was a great opportunity for you. You were there a lot, and that's actually where I said I first saw you. But you play with, I think, McGillney, the one. Well, I know you play with McGillney, but you had some really good players there. But like when you first saw Bure, because you played with Bure too, right? Like, he's pretty fast. The Russian Rocket. He's pretty fast. But which one of those guys, like, were you more impressed with, like McGillney, or was it just kind of a different kind of a thing? Like, cause you play with some really good players.
I hung out with McGillney quite a bit. He's a really good dude. Pav kind of hung out on his own. He had his own, you know, he'd get off the plane and he'd go somewhere else. But that was just Pav. Good guy. Pav was electric. So he'd pick up the puck and something was going to happen. Like, and it was going to be exciting. But it was all about Pav, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Elmo, Alex could do everything. He could check. He could pass. He could shoot. He could, like, as well-rounded a player as you could ever ever see. Like, he was so fucking good. And guys would say they couldn't knock him off the puck. Like, he was just too right. strong. And why that guy isn't in the Hall of Fame, I don't understand why not. 77 goals, something like that.
Yeah.
He told me, listen to this story. You've been to the Odd in Buffalo, right? So the old building in Buffalo, Alex told me the story. He said they had a play where they would dump the puck in, and the Zamboni was in the corner of the arena. Wasn't behind the net or anything like that. But the Zamboni door, since it was such an old arena, the Zamboni driver would kick the door as the puck was coming. And when he kicked the door, it would hit the puck and the puck would go right into the slot.
No way.
Alex said he must have scored like 10 goals that year that way.
Wow.
That play with the Zamboni driver.
Oh my God. That's amazing. And,
yeah. So, you know, that's one of the cooler stories of those old buildings, right?
We had Matthew Barnaby on. I wish I'd have known that, because I would have brought that up to him. He was on a few weeks ago as we were talking about the Odd. I love that play. It was a really cool place to see a game.
Yeah.
That's great. It was funny. I remember I was working in a visiting room when I first got to Philly, and I was fortunate. I got to travel and everything with the team, but I was like in charge of the visiting room, and that's kind of how I got to know a lot of guys, because I was, you know, I was always down there. But I'll never forget, I was standing there, and he was was their medical guy, Jim Pizzatella. He's really well known for making the robes for the tough guys and stuff. And anyway, they're sitting there talking, and they were always like Don King. You felt like Don King was in there with pizza. Who you gonna go tonight, Razor? Yeah, who you gonna go day day? You know, like, so we were sitting there the one night, and pizza goes, Who's got Lindros tonight? Who's gonna take care of him? And I swear to God, McGillney turns around and goes, you want me to go him? And I was like, yeah, I obviously was kidding, but just the way he said it, he acted serious. I was like, this dude's cool, man. Like, you want me to go him? I was like, oh,
I got another good dude. We got for another good McGillney story. So Mike Keenan was our coach in Vancouver. Keenan came then. And I think we'd lost like fucking 20 games in a row or something. We were fucking terrible. Geez. Guys didn't want to play for him, right? So he comes in and he's having the Clarkie meeting where he's going around the room to everybody, you know? And so he's ripping into guys, and he never, ever ripped into Alex. And Alex is tying his skate, and he's kind of leaning down, and he goes, and he's like, you fucking McGillney. And then Alex looks up and goes, he's like, he said something about Alex, and Alex looks up, he goes, you think I'm fucking scared of you? I've had people threaten my life, my family. I defected when I was 18 years old. You think I'm fucking scared of you? Go fuck yourself.
Wow.
Could you imagine?
Oh, Keenan, like, blank, white, and fucking left the room.
No shit, hey?
There you go, Uncle Mikey.
And Alex never said anything at all. Like he was quiet and... And you think of what those guys in that generation of Russian, they were getting extorted, right? Like they were going through it, you know, and that was my Mike.
Wow, that's
a great story, man. Yeah. Wow. That's
Mike, awesome. Mike left me alone. He just never played me. He left me
alone. I guess there's not much to rip on.
He never played me. Like, I think I sat like 20 games in a row once. I played with Snowy in Vancouver. Okay. And Snowy ruined it. Was it nasty? Did you help Snowy with the big shoulder pads?
Man, those things.
For all of us.
Oh my God. Were those awful or what, man? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
His chest trigger.
Yeah.
He built them up. They were up in his ears.
Yeah.
What's the advantage? Is the extra space there?
Well, I mean, I guess if you go down, I mean, you've got this much extra.
Yeah, but you don't have much mobility.
Wow. Like, it didn't look good. And you're right. He ruined it for you.
Probably didn't feel good either. I can't imagine.
That was the straw that broke the camel's back, because then they started bringing in the fucking rules, and, you know, I played against Patrick Waugh, and I never really cheated that much. I didn't really know how. And then I played against Patrick Waugh in the playoffs, and he skates by me, and I'm like, holy fuck. He had like these hip pads, like extra pads between his legs, like fucking under his armpits.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no wonder I'm fucking losing.
He's not getting scored on.
I'm not cheating.
Some extra pads.
Who was the goalie? There was a goalie. My dad told me that a goalie like put a little fishnet thing.
Just Tony O.
Yeah. That's who. And so if it went, it would catch, and it would go through. It was like,
great idea.
Yeah. He was telling me that.
They obviously can't get that.
Oh my God. That's unbelievable.
Pill a net in the old five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why, Yeah, that's why you weren't a 50 goal scorer, Riley. You gotta That's why you didn't get 50.
That's it.
Goalies were cheap.
They're cheating. Yeah, extra equipment.
That's,
you know,
right. If you're not cheating, you're not trying, man. That's what he's saying.
Pirco had this thing where if it hit him in the chest, his pants formed like a pocket in front of him. So it would fall, it would hit him in the chest and it would fall in his pants like a little pocket. And I was like, I'm not fucking cheating enough. I had no idea.
Yeah. You got to get more creative there, Hershey.
Then they brought in the rules. Yeah.
And they brought the right. Exactly. I got a question about like goalie partners, like throughout your career. I'm sure obviously you watched the game, Swayman and Omark in Boston. Yeah. They really support each other. I don't think it's a fake thing. And I'm not saying other teams don't, but even my son and his little partner, Max, they do the hug, you know, they do the whole thing after they win. But was there anyone that you played with that was like that you were really tight with and you felt like you guys both pushed each other but were supportive?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think. Like it's a tough relationship because you want to play.
And right.
If the other guy plays really well, you sit on the bench, right?
Yeah.
So it's actually a pretty good mind fuck because you're like, you know, I really like this guy. He's a good dude. We have fun. We're good, you know, like everything. But if he keeps winning, I don't get to play. Right.
Right.
So there's a fine balance and there's a healthy, you know, you can make the competition healthy. I tried to separate it, you know, from, you know, being, you know, competitive off the ice and being competitive on the ice and push that. But, you know, like guys that I got along with, I mean, I got along with Snowy pretty well, played with him. Yeah. Kirk McLean and I, like, I don't know if Kirk didn't like me. But today he's one of my really good buddies. Like it's
that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's really cool. So that way, thinking of some of the partners I had, Litz in Philly when the
family. Yeah. I mean, that guy. Yeah.
Neil Little. He's the fucking best. Like everybody's a good guy and everybody's pretty good. It's more the ones you remember that you know, you didn't quite get along with, and made it, you know, there's some stories like, you know, Eddie Belfour, apparently Jeff Hackett would put his pads out and Eddie'd be like, you know, you don't put your fucking pads out. Like, you know, there were certain guys like that there, but there wasn't that many. Most of the guys were fucking really good people. But I mean, I played on so many teams. Nasty played with Snowy, Kirk McLean, Arturs Erbe. Oh, Arturs Erbe. I got sent to the minors for Arturs Erbe. And he apologized to me. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
And I'm like, Archie, don't worry about it. it's part of the game, right? So Mike Richter.
Richter, yeah.
Good dude. He had quads on him that I'd never seen before. Like,
yeah.
Like tree stumps, you know?
Yeah.
You know, those are the guys that you remember. And just great people and good goalies. But and you bringing up your Pelly Lindbergh story, I'm so jealous right now. Like, so fucking cool. Like his mask. Yeah. Where is do they have his mask or
I think it's in NHL. Yeah, it's in the Hall of Fame. I think they have his mask there.
Now, did your dad make masks?
No, he didn't make any. No, he didn't make them. I actually got my dad a mask for Father's Day years ago because he played for a lot of teams. He was a trainer, but when he grew up, he had a full ride. He was a defenseman. But when he was 16, he lived in North Carolina and we had a team in the Eastern League there. And the goalie, when he was 16, got a new set of gear and they said, Sudsy, throw these on. You're going in the net for practice every day. So that's how he kind of became a goalie. And then he ended up getting played minutes in the American League, the Eastern League, the International Hockey League, and he backed up two games for the Flyers. Emergency.
That's cool.
And a funny story, Hershey, real quick. I just happened to turn a TV on Sunday because down south we didn't get hockey games a lot, but we had Home Team Sports, which is a sports channel, and I could watch all of the Washington Capitol games. Well, turned a TV on 1 o'clock, sit down. And there's a picture of my dad on the screen. And I'm like, and he's in his Maine Mariners uniform and it's a still picture. And it's Mike Emmerich, Doc Emmerich, calling the game. And he goes, not situated at the bench is Dave Sudsy Settlemeyer, the head trainer, but he's been called into backup duty today. And I'm like, of course, I'm like 16. I'm like, oh my God. So right away I get my phone and I call the locker room because I know the number, right? I called it and my dad answers. He says, training room. And I'm like, Dad, are you going to play? He goes, Biff, I got to call you back, man. and he hangs up on me. So he called me afterwards, and he wasn't sure because Kenny Raggett took a puck in warm up in his neck.
Yeah.
So he couldn't go. So Pete Peters hadn't played 2 weeks. So Pete starts dehydrating. He's cramping. And my dad is I sweated through 4 shirts. He's like, because I'm like, he didn't even go to the bench because he was scared to go to the bench. So he sat up in the coach's offices watching. So he told me this after. He's like, I'm sorry. I couldn't talk. He goes, I was so afraid I was going to get thrown in this game. And it was play like they had to win.
Oh, he was shitting his pants.
Oh, exactly. We actually talked about this the other day. And I said, yeah, but as a kid, I'm like, I don't care if you get scored on. If you get in the game, like, it's really the coolest thing ever. But yeah, man, it was crazy.
That is an awesome story. Yeah. I mean, how great would that have been if he would have got into the game?
Yeah. I would have loved it. Cool. It would have been great. They did an interview one time because they'd do little segments on him once in a while because Hexy didn't like do morning skates, especially in the playoffs. So they were doing this special. I have it somewhere on video, and they're asking all the players, and the players are kind of giving it to him a little. Well, you got talk. Rick Tockett says, well, you come down the ice, there's a lot of room to shoot at there, you know? And then they asked Bernie Perrott, and Bernie goes, I'm employed as the goaltender instructor, but miracles I don't perform. He
says. That's what he did perform a couple miracles.
Yeah, Bernie did.
What is the saying? Even Bernie saves more something.
Yeah, saves Jesus. More than God or something.
Yeah,
more than
Jesus. Yeah,
that's fucking great.
Yeah.
But Riley, you scored on Carey Price your first goal. You told me so. I mean, fuck you. You must have had some skill.
One and only. Yeah.
One and only, but it was a good one.
It was a good one.
Well, let's hear about it.
Wow. I don't know much to talk about.
RJ Umberger made a hell of a play. I mean,
let's tee up the time and space of the game. We're
we're down
5-1.
4-1.
Like 4-1.
4-1 or 5-1.
I thought it was 5-1 because I thought it was fully out of hand. I think it there was what 5-6 minutes to go.
He couldn't even celebrate his first goal in the NHL.
So it was one of those.
You would have thought he was a 50-goal scorer. He snipes it, just turns. Yeah. Not a big deal.
Went back for the puck, broke the puck out, moved it to RJ Umberger, popped in the middle of the ice, got it back, mid-stride.
It's a good goal,
though. Yeah. Really. Was it Philly, too? Where was it?
Philly. It was in Philly,
So did the fans at least give you a fucking good round of, you know?
Well, I mean, they cheered because, you know, the buzzer goes and the horn goes and all that. But it was like, it was out of hand and I knew it was like a kind of a meaningless goal. So I just, you know, guys come over, tap me on the head. I go back and line up for the faceoff beside Steve Beijing and ask him to fight. Said, let's go.
Steve Beijing like, asked you to fight after you scored.
No, I went and asked him. I think I got to do my job. I'm like, I didn't do my job yet.
No, you should have been like, I'm a goal scorer now, dude.
Yeah,
like,
I
don't fight anymore. No, I don't need that shit, right?
No. So it was one of those. But,
yeah.
Good story.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So. That was it.
There's not much more to do it than that. But I was excited. I was probably going crazy pumped. More than anyone. We were really tight from the day we met when he came to the Phantoms the lockout year, the full year, and we actually won the cup. And Riley was a big part of that team. We had a great hockey team.
Yeah, Nass loved the sticks I showed up with.
Hershey.
Let's hear it.
I haven't met him yet, right? So Homer says, hey, we got a guy coming in, and he says, you're going to like this guy, because he knew I loved the guys knuckling it up. And so, like, he didn't.
Yeah.
You know? So I didn't see Riles, but his bag's left in the room. So I go, and I'm, like, taking his shit out. And then I see these sticks. Hershey, I didn't know if he was left-handed or right-handed. This blade was straight. And I'm like, what's going on here? I've never seen a fucking stick. It's like Gretzky's, but straighter.
I was going to say.
And he's like, I came from the Central League, man. That's all they gave us, you know.
The big pallet, too. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it was max height. straight.
For face-offs.
I'm like, which way is this guy going? And then Homer goes, I think it'll be laying on the ice more than anything. I said, okay.
So I was going to be my first thing. Was fucking, you're a passer.
Yeah, right. You got a good stick on the
face. You pass better with a straighter blade, right? You get too much hook on it. Fuck, you can't.
That's right.
That's you're like Gretzky. You know, that'll bring me to a Gretzky story. So I'll tell you a Gretzky story. I'd never met Gretzky during my career. And I played against him one time, but I was in LA and I was golfing with Russ Cortinel at Sherwood Golf and Country Club. And
Gretzky has a house there and a membership, and Russ, and they're best friends, right? So we're coming around 18 and just finishing up, and Gretzky's group comes to 9, and the tee boxes are right beside each other. And I'm like, Russ, it's fucking Wayne Gretzky. Like, I never met him, right? I'm this fucking Wayne Gretzky. And he's like, I'm like, can you introduce me to him? And he's like, stop fucking fanboying. You're embarrassing me. That's what he said to me. And he says, they're only playing 9. We'll meet him in the clubhouse after. So I'm like, fucking jacked, eh? So we go down the fairway. I can barely hit my ball. I'm going to meet Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. Right? Get into the clubhouse, sit down. Like, I'm sitting, like, right beside Gretzky, like, right across from him. And everything you hear about him, what a good dude. Like, just loves hockey nerd, wants to know every goal he scored. And I'm just – so I talked with him for about 45 minutes, you know, and it was like – it was the fucking coolest moment of my life. But I had a flight I had to catch to go back to Vancouver. I was visiting Russ. So I had to get up. I'm like, fuck, talk to Wayne Gretzky or lose my job, whatever. I had So I get up, and I go, Wayne, it was really nice to meet you. And I don't get a photo because Russ doesn't want me to fucking fanboy. So I'm still pissed about that. But so I'm like, it's nice to meet. And he looks at me. Remember, he wants to know every goal he scored. And he goes, hey, did I ever play against you? And I'm like, well, yeah. My first NHL win, which was my second NHL game, was in the Forum in LA. And I played against you and we won. And he's like, did I score on you that night? I'm like, actually, no, you didn't. And I know you lose sleep at night. If you need a psychologist, I got one for you. And I fucking left.
No way.
First time I met him, I fucking burned Wayne Gretzky.
He probably loved it though, because he's such a. I bet you he loved that.
Russ said he was dying laughing. Yeah. Right? And I left going, what the fuck did I just do?
That's great.
Wayne Gretzky. You know?
That's awesome.
You get one moment, and that was one of the coolest moments was meeting Wayne. And Nasty, you would know him, don't you?
I've been fortunate enough to hang out with him a few times. Oh my god, dude. I mean, I always say when people say something about him, like, this guy, you could meet him, he'd sit beside you at a bar and talk to you like he's known you his whole life and never even bring up himself, you know, like what he does,
right,
or what he's done. Yeah. But yeah, great guy. What's that?
Until you figure out he's the great one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is the great one. He's awesome.
I caught Gretzky at the end of his career, and I caught Mario in the middle. And if I, you know, so someone asked me who was better, Mario, I say Mario because Mario was like fucking, he lit me up for 3 in the Garden. And then 3 on me, 2 on Richter. I think we lost like 10-4. I didn't fucking last. One of his goals is famous. He scores on me in a breakaway. They show it fucking all the time. It's like a Forsberg. But anyways, so people ask me, and I'm like, you know, for me, like, but could you imagine those two in today's era with no hooking and no holding?
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like Mario, how big he was and how fucking strong he was. Like, even the Big E, like, with no hooking and holding, right? Like, how good he would have been, right?
Yeah.
Like, you think of the hits that he had to take, of course, that ended his career. Those wouldn't have happened, right? The hooking, the holding and shit. So, game. I'm a bit old school from where I'm, the generation I played. And, I mean, I like the odd tussle, right? I don't think kids in junior hockey should be fighting. That's my opinion. But, you know, like, so I have a tough time today because – I'm not a proponent for taking out fighting, but I know what it does to the brain, right? Like, I know my brain. So, like, I have a tough time with it. And then I see, like, the Big E, his career and all that. So, I still like a good tussle too myself. Yeah.
I like him when there's a reason for it. Right. Yeah. Like when he was playing, like, you go into the game and you know, you're fighting George LaRocque or Donald Brashear. And like, mentally, as you brought up earlier, but like, I feel like I've never done it. But in my opinion, I'd rather get pissed off of, you know, something happening, get pissed off and just fight instead of having to sit all day and think about it. You know, if it happens, it happens. And I think you're right. Like I still enjoy a good tilt, especially if it means something for the game and that stuff. I think I enjoy it. I'm old school too, obviously. So.
Emotional, spontaneous. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think more, a lot of my fights, I wish they would have been like that, but I think it was like you're playing within the rules without trying to you know, get another penalty. You know, right. I mean? It's like, oh, now I got to go run somebody to get a hit or get a big hit, blow somebody up, and then fight. And then it looks like an instigator or whatever, yeah. You know, how that goes. So it's easier just to drop the mitts and yeah. make it 5-5 and
yeah.
get your
yeah. yeah once they brought the instigator in, it all changed, right? Like,
yeah.
then each team had one designated fighter.
Yeah.
So you know who you're fighting, you know, yeah. it's like, whereas the generation that I played, you know, there's three or four guys on every team. Like I had with my team was Gino. We had Gino Ogic.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Brashear could fight. You know, there was other guys that were on our blue line that could fight. Dana Merzen could fight. Right. So you had more guys, but then it became just a one-on-one and it became, I will never say it's pointless, Riley, because your fights were, you can't say none of your fights were, but it just didn't make sense for the game. Right. Like,
yeah, I agree.
So, you know, I'm on the board of directors with Hockey Canada right now. And you know, there's a lot of changes that they're making and I wouldn't say changes, but there's little things. I struggle with 16-year-olds fighting in junior hockey and grown men cheering them on, you know, that, but if you're an adult, fuck, have at it. You know, if that's what you want to do, go do it. And then, you know, we've got this sexual assault case thing going on with these guys. And that's all just unfortunate. And it's just bad all around that whole situation. And I don't want to get into it and I don't want to talk, but it's like, for everybody, the trauma out of that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
everybody, you know, and this poor girl, like she's like, everybody knows who she is in the town, right? Like, so how's she getting, you know, and these guys, like they're going to be tagged with this. And it's just, it's like the whole thing, you know? So hopefully trying to in that direction too, just trying to teach guys that, hey, you know, there's a respect and a code that we need. And there's a difference between being a man and being an asshole. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what I try to say, you know, and it's just fucking, but anyways, now I'm bringing the pod back down. Bring us back up.
Bring it back up. Bring story. It back up.
Oh, give us a no. story, you know?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But, yeah. NASA's got something deep within. You got a story right there.
Well, can I don't know if we can.
Can you?
Is this rated? What's this rated? No, I'm kidding, man. I tell you what, Hershey, we appreciate you. Appreciate your time. I appreciate everything you're doing. Kind of. I had read about this stuff and I remember, you know, thinking, man, like, you know, I didn't know this, you know, like, it's just like with Riley, like I never knew, you know, he was struggling a bit with it, you know, having to fight because I was with him all the time, but he didn't show it. And like with you, when I met you, I know you weren't here too long. I would have never known, like, cause I just remember having laughs with you every day and, giving you shit for having to push more horse hair into your pads off the tops. And
started cheating.
But buses, yeah, right. I gotta make these things bigger, man. But we appreciate you coming on, man. And like Riley always says, being vulnerable and just all the help you're doing. And man, it's just a pleasure to have you on. And God, I hope I get to see you soon, man. Like you said, give you a big hug, man.
Yeah. No, and thank you. And thanks for letting me, you know, share a bit of my story too. I got a book out, The Save of My Life. CoreyHirsch.com is my website. You know, and ultimately just you guys giving me the platform to be able to, to tell some stories, relive some stuff, have some fun, but also like, hey, fuck, if you're struggling out there, go get the fucking help, right? Like,
yeah,
like you can still be, a man and go get help, right? I mean, there's nothing, you know, and you can still go play hockey, get in fights in hockey or whatever you want to do, or fix cars or whatever you think a man is, but fuck, life is, can be so much better, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
I appreciate you guys giving me the platform to be able to, talk and just being able to connect again and fucking Flyers organization. You guys are family, you know, like once you, whether you're there for a week or a month, like all of a sudden you're family and you get some good stories out of there. The Clarky Holmgren story, I'll never forget.
Yeah,
that's right. But
thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Big thank you to our friend Corey Hirsch for hopping on.
Yes, great guy, man. You glad he's doing well, man. And it's really cool to see you, you know, last week doing some stuff with him. And he really appreciates it, obviously.
Yeah. Well, he's been on the path for a while. He's been working at his mental health. And
it
takes time, you know, it's a process. So it's nice to see him kind of turn the corner and find some relief. So
for sure.
Wish him the best.
Yeah. Good man.
Yeah.
Good man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to reconnect. So.
Yeah.
It's that time, Nast.
Is it? It's right now?
Like right.
Is it right now? Right now? It's time for the Clear Questions brought to you by Clear Rum. Go to clearrum.com/shop. Type in Nasty 2023 and get 35% off of your order. PA residents only. Get on it.
What a deal.
This is going to be with me.
You're going to be needing a reload here soon.
Oh, buddy. We need. Hey, we got to get a hold of them.
Right?
Boys. We're going to need a lot for that trip.
Loading up bus A.
Loading up bus A, bus B, C, D, E, F, G.
Hmm.
Is there another one? We're loading them up. We're loading them up, though, man. What is it, Baller? What do you got?
What's up, boys?
What's up?
MGS dude over on Twitter, he's asking, who was the most naturally gifted player to wear the orange and black during your time with the team?
Well, you've seen a lot more players come through than
United. Man, there's so many guys, like, over 26 years.
It's a lot of skill. A
lot of skill. I mean,
Claude one of them number 32?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Daniel Lacroix? Oh, Riggedy Riles with the old green gobby? The green gobby? Yeah. Obviously, G's got to pop right to mind. I mean, like, he's still doing it.
Yeah.
And he is... highly, highly skilled. I actually was watching I was showing two of the kids that are here with me, Julian and Otto, a little, I just ran across, may have been something Baller had posted, but there were some highlights, top 10 G highlights or something. And one was that I had forgot about was someone passed a puck, a guy lifted a stick, and he redirected it purposely, his foot, back door to Coots, and Coots tap. I mean, it was just, but, you know, G was just so highly skilled. Even when you played with him when he first came in. And I know there's been a ton of highly skilled guys. Zhirinov was a guy who wasn't here very long.
Yeah.
You heard what Mike Richards said about him. Like, I mean, this guy was like, he was another level skill as well. But I'm going to go with G. I have to say G.
Yeah.
Claude Giroux. Yeah. Just guy used to just, he does those little things that a lot of people don't notice, you know, like, I mean,
so crafty.
For God's sakes, he's on his offhand and turns the stick around and wins face all straight back, you know, like, I mean, just little things that I saw him do for all those years, and he's actually still doing them. I'm going to go with G. That's a great question, because there's so many guys. I hate to leave someone out, but Claude Giroux.
To me. That's what I would say. I mean, obviously, I play with him, and I watched him develop with the Phantoms and Flyers, but you could see his sick hands right from the start. I mean,
really talk about sick.
So I think for a guy that's coming as a Flyers pick and evolve into a high skill guy, I mean, I don't know who else would even be in that category, but I mean,
there's obviously been skilled players, but I mean, G's just his next level.
Yeah, yeah, crafty, eyes up, always. Finding ways to feed pucks through the little spaces. It's absolutely incredible.
100%.
Good question.
It is.
G is the answer.
Over on Instagram, we got Construction Kurt. What's the gnarliest injury either one of you have witnessed in a game? He mentions Lappy taking a puck to the face.
Yep.
That was tough to see. That was really tough to see. We were petrified because, like, we didn't know if he got him in the eye. Like, he obviously got him in the face near his eye, but, like, it looked like it got him right in the eye. And I witnessed that before with Johnny Stevens, unfortunately, with the Phantoms. The second year or the third year of the team, that's what ended his career eventually. He took a slap shot from the point, and he didn't wear a visor. A lot of guys did back then. That was really ugly. That's probably one of the worst that I saw. Scariest as well.
And man.
I mean, it was – I mean, Lappy even said – we talked about it when he was on, but, like, he – I know when the trainer got out there, he was like, is my eye here? Is my eye? Because he couldn't see anything, obviously, because he had the broken bones there.
Oh, man.
But that one, you know, made you sick to your stomach to see. You know, so anybody, not just because we knew him, but those are scary, scary situations.
Yeah. I got two others. One, I was coaching with the Phantoms, and Eric Wellwood got his Achilles tendon stepped on in the middle of a play in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And skated off the ice, blood just seeping out of the bottom sole of his skate on the ice, like carted off the ice, middle of the play,
right.
Emergency surgery. And, well, he landed up retiring, as we know the story goes.
It's pretty, a shame.
Pretty wild. And then the other one actually was my first year in Philly, lockout year, sitting on the bench, Todd Fedor.
Oh, my God.
Friggy's first game, he'd signed with the Phantoms. He'd already played with the Flyers. He signs a contract with the Phantoms. First game, sitting on the bench in the Spectrum. I think John Slaney had rimmed the puck.
Yep.
Ripped it around the glass. Everyone's kind of looking over the boards to see where the puck is. Everyone moves.
Fridge did.
Out of the way. Friggy, I'm right beside him, and just puck
the sound.
Right.
I just remember that
sound.
Oh, my,
that sound. It sounded like squeezing plastic. Broke his orbital bone. I think that was the first time. And then, obviously, Bugard broke the other side, but it was ugly. Yeah. Put him out for good chunk of that season. So
it's tough to see.
Super ugly ones, yeah. But, yeah,
been a few.
Was Welly the fastest guy you ever coached or played with?
I would say he's probably the quickest guy. You know, quick in the sense that, like, his first two or three strides in any direction were so, so quick. Yeah, I think, like, once you get going, there's probably guys equally as fast, if not faster, but, like, quick here, quick there, like, you know, just cross over and be super quick. I would say so. I mean, he was light on his feet.
I think he would have had a good career.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Or, you know, a longer career. Like, he was a good little player.
He was a good little player. Good on pucks. Like, just getting on pucks because he got him his quickness. He could just take that two or three strides and get a stick on it and generate a half breakaway, partial breakaway, sometimes full breakaway. So,
yeah.
I love Welly. I think he's coaching up in the O there.
Yeah,
so.
He is, yeah.
I think he's with the Maple Leafs now.
Oh, is he?
Is he really?
So. Maybe
sure that's Eric or not, Kyle?
Eric, yeah.
Yeah, Eric, yeah.
Huh. Oh, nice. What's up, Welly?
Welly.
Hadn't seen him in a while. I had to reach out to Welly.
All right, we got one final one. This is from Chris Brown 128 over on Instagram. What's Nasty's favorite prank he's ever done?
Ooh.
I haven't done many.
No?
The snake, the cooler with the snake was a lot of fun because I got everyone, including UPS guys, FedEx guys. I mean, we got everybody with that. That one was really good. One of my favorites, though, was when I sewed Michael Raffles' phone into his pants. That one, we've talked about that one before. That one was just funny because it was Raffy, and he was just so confused.
Rattled.
He was, you know, he looks over, he goes, I was about to say, there's a secret pocket in my pants. I didn't do anything.
Holy fuck. That's funny, man. I was about to ask you guys, hey, there's a secret pocket in my thing. I swear. I couldn't figure it out.
He
could make sense that it was a prank.
He could not figure it out. The pockets in that, he had a new suit, and they were so long. I'm like, oh, this will be perfect. So I put the phone in there, turned the pants out, inside out, sewed right across. So it felt like he had a normal pocket.
Right, yeah.
So you can see him in the video. We have a video. I think Ballers posted it before, but he's looking, and we're like trying not
everyone
to laugh,
too,
and I just started snickering. I couldn't help it. That was one of my favorites, and we used to do this one real quickly in Toronto in the visiting room. So you know how some places have a curtain that'll come all the way through, like, to kind of separate a room? Well, they had one of those in there but it went inside of a door. So you could walk back like 10 feet. So I would get in there and get Sal to tell someone, hey, get in here. I would already be in the closet. And you can't see anything. It's pitch black. It's a black curtain, and you're in this little area. And Sal would always be like, hey, like, I'll use you an example. Riles, get in there, and I'm going to get Nasty to go open the door. So someone would get in the closet not knowing I'm in there, and I would just fucking put my hand on her or something, and you scream. It was great. That was one of my – we used to always do that in Toronto. But the snake one is – people love the most.
Yeah, you're pretty sneaky too.
Yeah,
it's good guys.
I like to hide.
You do like to hide. Yeah, jumping out of nowhere and scare the shit out of people.
I like doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's a good question, but I guess we have to go with the snake one because that one was they even put that one on the NHL Network legendary, the one day.
Yeah, you've gotten a lot of people with that.
I have. I've made my own now. I got that. I got to give props to Red Batty and Green Bay. Green Bay Packers head equipment guy. He sent that to me. He's like, he called me. He goes, I got something for you. I know you like to screw around and have fun. He goes, you're going to love this. It scared me when I opened it because I wasn't sure what it was. But, that was probably my favorite one, the snake.
Yeah. Love it. That's it, Nast.
That's it?
Clear questions in the books.
All right.
146 in the books.
In the books. Debo, can you believe it?
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's
crazy. How do you go about it?
Just got to wait till next week for 147. Just got to wait till
next week, Debo.
Well, Nass, you better take care of yourself. Get some rest.
I will. Super Bowl Sunday.
Be sure to subscribe to
the
pod.
Please do.
Yeah.
I do subscribe to it.
Be sure to comment, ask some questions.
Yeah. Please do that.
Please do. All right, knuckleheads, until next week, stay safe.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.